alarm goes off at 4:57 so that I am, you know, I have like a minute to be like, oh, what is happening? And I come downstairs and I make coffee and I have the same mug that I use every day. I make zero decisions in the morning. I probably don't make any decisions until 10 a.m. Zero, none. And that really works for me because then I'm not exhausted.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. It is an honor to have my friend and colleague, Lori Kennedy, back to the podcast. And what I love about having Lori on the podcast is basically I feel like we are both sitting here with a glass of wine, shooting back and forth about what it takes to be an optimized entrepreneur, how to support people in living their best possible lives, and getting completely real on our very own struggles as we attempt to do these things in our own life. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of being on Lori's podcast, The Business of Becoming, where we started to talk about what it really takes to grow a business. We're going to contrast that conversation with a real conversation today about how do we avoid burnout on the other side? Because working harder and harder and hustling is not necessarily what makes us strong and effective entrepreneurs, but working smartly and with ease and with strategy and by confronting those things in our lives that are getting in the way of our optimal energy, that's how we truly achieve greatness. I love this conversation with Lori today because she balanced out really practical tips on how she made some strategic changes in her life, along with the journey that she went through that forced her to make those. It is always my pleasure to welcome my friend Lori Kennedy to the podcast. Lori Kennedy, welcome back to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I always love chatting with you. And I feel like it doesn't even matter if we have an audience. Every time we sit down and have a conversation, we're like recording our own little podcast.
Yeah, totally.
Because there's such gold that comes out of it. But, you know, you and I had a conversation a few weeks ago on your podcast, The Business of Becoming. And we were talking about how do you take yourself seriously as an entrepreneur? And I want to take that conversation and I want to contextualize it to this idea of how do we achieve balance as an entrepreneur while still being a total badass? Because they're not mutually exclusive. So that's where we're going to go. But before we do, can you just give everyone, for those people in our world who don't know who you are and what you're up to, which are very few at this point, a little bit of a background in terms of who you are and your journey and why this is a topic you're so darn passionate about?
Yeah, so I feel like this is the great struggle of my life, what we're going to talk about today. So who am I? So I am just Lori at the moment, and I run a company called Lori Kennedy Inc., but really the Wellness Business Hub, and we work with alternative health practitioners by providing them with business training and personal development strategies, tools to help them grow their businesses online. And I started off as a personal trainer and then I went to become a nutritionist, a registered holistic nutritionist. And I did that full time for 7 years while getting married and having two babies and then getting a divorce. And now I am here and we are, you know, running an online company with a team and like thousands of community members and clients and just being so inspired every day by my clients who are literally jumping out of their own comfort zone, like parachuting out of their own comfort zone, that it really inspired me to like up my game because I felt like to be a good leader, I had to really hold that space. And we'll dive into that a lot more. But it really was my clients who were you know, gaining momentum by leaps and bounds that really held a mirror up to my own behavior and just my own day to day that really caused me to like kick it up like 10 levels.
I think that for people who know you and know the intensity with which you deliver and produce, hearing you say that you need to kick it up 10 levels is probably deeply disconcerting for them. So can you give some context to what it means to kick it up in that way? Because there's the perception in the online space. And for those of you who are like, I still don't know who Lori Kennedy is, because maybe they're not in the healthcare practitioner online space. Lori's built this empire, and she literally helps thousands of people. And she is totally prolific at putting content out into the world. And that's why I said, for those of you who know her, are going to stop in their tracks when you're like, I'm up in the game. What does that mean? Because our audience is entrepreneurs, and they're constantly wanting to know how they can up it. And sometimes we feel like we're already there and there's nothing left to give. So what did you shift?
So it's really personal. Like, it's, you know, the business is good. Like, upping the game from the business is just staying focused and actually doing less. Like, it's, and it's an interesting, and maybe that's another conversation for another day, of like doing less to grow faster. Because that's a big lesson that I've learned over the last like 6 months. But upping the game for me, in the context that I was saying it before, was it's personal. So I have two kids. I am divorced. I have my kids a lot. My kids are super active, and I am a highly sensitive person, and I, you know, I'm intuitive and I'm an empath, and I take on all the feelings and all the things. And my personal life, you know, it's really personal. Like, it's from my personal life is really what I meant by that. There's been a lot that's gone on behind the scenes, personally, and my body has been greatly affected by that. And before we hit record, you know, you asked me what I was like super jazzed up about. And aside from my Facebook ad course, I said the fact that I've been able to sustain 4 days a week of heavy, hard, you know, weight workouts plus cardio and doing all the other things without my body tanking is a first for me in like a decade. And so when I think, okay, I need to up my game, my business is at such a point right now where I have extra time, which is amazing. And it's taken a long time to get there, but I can take 90 minutes every day and go to the gym and have like a full hour long workout. I didn't feel like I could do that before. And maybe I just didn't see how to, but anyway, I chose not to. But my business is at a point right now where I felt like I needed to improve my habits and add some additional health strategies, stress reduction strategies, so that I could be in tip-top shape to grow the company and also to hold space. Like, we all, I'm sure, have instances where we feel like a fraud. And I think, you know, it's funny because like both you and I, we work with health practitioners, and now you're like, you know, you have, I think, better health habits than I do regardless. But there were things that I felt pretty embarrassed about that I wasn't doing for myself for no particular reason, but I just wasn't doing them. And I knew that they would help me feel better, which would in turn help me show up better for my clients and my kids. And you know, there's things I think that we all have that we feel shame about, that we know we should be doing that we're not doing for whatever reason. And I just got sick of feeling that way. Like, every time I would go to my therapist, I would talk about the same nonsense. And I'm like, ugh, like I was like over myself. And so the question really was, she's like, well, why aren't you doing them? I'm like, I don't know. Isn't that your job to figure out why I'm not doing them? What we came up with was that I was making it too big of a goal. And so specifically around, let's just say, meditation, one of the things, like, every day I have to meditate 20 minutes, blah, blah. And she was like, well, why don't you just start with once a week? And I was like, oh. And it's so funny because, like,
I love overachievers.
You know, like, I coach people for a living, right? I have for like since 1999, like I've done this for a living. I was like, yeah, okay, fine. Right. Cause then it's like, well, of course I can sit quietly for 5 minutes once a week. Like, if I can't do that, like, I should close up shop right now. Right. Kind of thing. And so she made it to be so easy for me that I felt like more of an idiot and more of a loser if I couldn't do it than if I did it. And I think part of the reason that I don't know why I wasn't doing it. I don't know that it's a big block that I need to uncover. It's just I wasn't doing it. And so that's what I mean. That's a very long-winded answer, but that's what I mean by upping the game. Like doing the things, either personally or professionally, for me that I knew would help me get to whatever next level I want to be at that I wasn't doing.
Fair enough. And so what have you changed?
So I added the meditation onto the end of my workout, actually. Like, this is super practical, but it was like, I don't want to get up in the morning and meditate because I have my morning magic time where I write. I don't think that it's realistic for me to do that. I like to get up, I like to drink coffee, and I like to write from 5 to 7. That's my time. And so I pay to have a trainer 4 days a week. And some people are like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. I wouldn't go otherwise. And the times where he's canceled on me, I don't go. So I need that.
I know nothing about that.
Right. I just surrendered to the fact that I was like, this is who I am. And it's taken me 6 months. Now I'll go, actually, because my body craves the movement. And I've noticed for the first time in my life, given the fact that I was even a personal trainer, how it affects my moods. Like, totally noticed, because I didn't go for a couple days in a row and I could tell the difference in my mood. So that was a huge eye opener for me. But what have I changed? Like, I honestly just surrendered to that I get to do it my own way, which sounds so simple and sounds so ridiculous, but it's, even though I do march to the beat of my own drum, I still get affected by society and cultural norms and like what everybody else is doing. And the fact that I thought I should wake up and meditate right away, because isn't that how you do it, kind of thing?
Isn't that what all the big entrepreneurs do?
Right. Or whoever meditates, like they wake up, they meditate. And I didn't do that. And so what I did was I actually attached it to the end of my workout. And so we finished my workout 5 minutes before the hour so that I have a meditation app and there's 5 minute meditations, and I sit in the gym on the floor where everybody's stretching and I close my eyes and I don't care if people think I'm ridiculous. I don't care. And I sit there and I meditate for 5 minutes and then I stretch and I leave. Because I attached it to, and I told my trainer, you need to hold me accountable to this. Like, so we end 5 minutes early. And so because I've done that, and now it's one thing. Now I just go to the gym. So it's not like two things. I don't go to the, like, two things would be doing it separate. So I just still have this one thing that I have to do. So in my mind, it's just so much easier. And I've been doing it for basically all of January. And I, you know, even though it's 5 minutes, I can tell the difference on the days when I, on the random days that I don't do it.
Well done, because it's hard to change a habit and it's hard to build new things, and it takes a bit of discipline. And the thing about discipline and willpower is I firmly believe that they just don't work. And what you have to do is you have to sequence things. And that's exactly what you've done, right? Is you've sequenced them appropriately, and you don't get to go home and do work and all the other things that you want to do until you've actually put those things in, which are going to amplify the rest of your day. It's super smart and it's tailored to you, which is what I think so many of us get scared to do, is we hear that, you know, this person or that person or this person that we admire does it this way. Then we fall on that bandwagon for 6 weeks, and then we move on to the new bandwagon for 6 weeks. And so in saying that, I want to ask you about your morning, because I know your morning is totally sacred to you and you are highly disciplined and committed to it. But before you even tell us that, I do want to throw that caveat to people, is the thing that I admire most about your morning is that it's the morning that works for you. And it's not the morning that works for me, because we're not the same person.
Right.
So, like, I'm asking you to share your morning with us as inspiration for people to curate and create a morning that works for them. But can you share with us a little bit about what yours is and why it works for you?
Totally. And I love that you sort of gave that disclaimer, because I think one of the traps that I fell in, just even to bring it back to like the meditation at the gym or the eating even, or just in general, like, I am not immune to like looking at other people and seeing what other people are doing and assuming that that's what's going to work for me. I am not immune to that. And so it's taken probably far longer than it should have, but regardless, I'm here now, where even in listening to my body in terms of the food. So like eating more carbs than probably the, you know, than what keto or whatever, it doesn't matter. Like whatever is recommended works better for me. So it's just right now, today, you know, whatever. So in just saying that, like, listen, you know, as I share the morning, it's because I need the sanity first and foremost. So if you're someone listening to this and you're like, my mornings are a gong show, you don't necessarily have to do what I'm doing, but just figure it out so that they're not a gong show, right? So that you start your day from a calm place, and not every day starts from a calm place. This morning was not a calm place, but you know, more days than not are. So I get up at, my alarm goes off at 4:57, so that I am, you know, I have like a minute to be like, oh, what is happening? And I come downstairs and I make coffee, and I have the same mug that I use every day. I make zero decisions in the morning. I probably don't make any decisions until 10 a.m. Zero, none. And that really works for me because then I'm not exhausted from making decisions. Even from like the kids' lunches and all of that, like that gets done the night before, what they're eating. Like there's no decisions that are being made in the morning. I eat the same thing every day. Like, and I know that's not great, but it works for me. So from 5 to 7 a.m., I work. And so what that consists of is writing an email or writing some type of sales copy. That goes first, so that at least I, if my day goes sideways, which I have two kids, it does, I know that I've promoted something that I'm really proud of that can help my community. So that happens every single day, rain or shine.
Does it happen on weekends?
Sometimes. Usually one out of the 2 days, it really does. And I don't set my alarm necessarily on the weekends, but my body is so... I've been doing this since 2012. So like my body is so in the rhythm of waking up that early. I also don't go to bed late. And my kids know that I've talked to them about this. My morning time is my meditation. It's my sanity saving time. And so they're old enough now. This didn't happen when they were little, but they're old enough now that like they don't even want to talk to me on the weekends in the morning. They just want to go like watch an iPad or do whatever. So if there's stuff I need to do, then for sure I'll do it. I'm not someone who's like, no, I do not work on the weekends. If I need to, I will. My intention is to not work on the weekends, but I'm also the CEO of a company. And sometimes that has to happen in order for us to like hit deadlines. So from 5 to 7, I have coffee and I write. And then from 7 until 8:30, I'm mummy. So we do lunches, we eat breakfast together, we pack bags, it's winter, so we look for hats and gloves that are lost that we can never seem to find. And we walk out the door at 8:15, I drop them off at school, and I go right to the gym every day. Monday through Friday, right to the gym. And I'm at the gym from 8:30 until my training session ends at 9:30, and I have it blocked off in my calendar until 10. So that I don't have to rush home for 9:45 and do a meeting or have a call or whatever. So I have my schedule blocked until 10. I come home, I have a shake, I review my day. My day goes from 10 until 3. And then I turn back into mummy. And that's my day. So I really don't make any decisions, including training, which is also why I hired a trainer, because I don't want to expend that mental energy figuring out my own workouts. Like, in my mind, I have every day 10 units of energy. And depending on how the morning goes, I might start my day with like 2 units left because I got kids and there's no one here to help me. Right? So I needed to alleviate any extra effort mentally by delegating and outsourcing to anyone and everyone I could so that I could have units of energy for my children and for my company and for my clients. And yeah, it costs me money, and I'm luckily now in a position to be able to do that. But that's the way that I think about it, and that's my morning.
Well, and I love that. And you're talking about zero decisions. And I want to point out for people, this isn't just Lori's brain that will expend too much energy making decisions. The research is really unequivocal around this notion that we have a finite number of decisions that we can make in any given day. And if you're going to waste them on menial things, like what socks should I pair with my blue pants? Those are less, this less room in your brain you have to make decisions that actually matter. The opportunity cost on stupid decisions is actually quite high. And the ability to make those decisions in the evening when you shut down for the day is usually much easier. So it's, I think that's just such a really key and important hack that you've put in there in your own life in terms of supporting and achieving balance. And the topic that we really wanted to get into today was burnout. And how do we avoid burnout? Because I know our conversation often with practitioners in particular is, like, guys, you have to step into this and take this seriously. It can't be your hobby. You can't dabble at it. You can't kind of get around to it. And so where is the line between burnout and balance and taking your business seriously and showing up in a real way? Like, how long did it take you to kind of figure out that rhythm for yourself?
Well, up until yesterday, if I'm being totally honest, no, but like, I think that I only had the awareness in so much as the season that I was in, right? So I'm in a season right now where things are, like, from my business perspective, like, it's so clear to me. And, you know, 5 years ago, I had no idea what I was doing. And so I was just doing everything that I could, fully neglecting my health, because the business took priority. And I knew that, and I was okay with that. And to be honest, I probably wouldn't go back and do it any differently because it got me here. And so I think that depending on the season that you're in, you got to pick the priorities. So I don't love the word balance. I think priorities for me work better. So once I recognized that I was expending too much energy on things that didn't help me get ahead, either personally or professionally, that was a big aha for me, in terms of simple things, grocery shopping, food choices, what to wear, workouts, like all the things that we don't really realize we're thinking about, but we are. And I was last year, for example, was a hard year. It was the year, first year that my son played like super competitive hockey. So I only started to live in a hockey arena last year. I mean, he played before, but last year we legit like 5 days a week lived there. I don't mean actually live there. I just mean we were there every day.
You're Canadian. We knew what you meant.
Yeah, I'm Canadian. I felt like I got hit upside the head because my day starts at 5 and my work day would end at 3 or 3:30, but then I would have like a whole nother day because the kids would come home and they would have to eat. And then we'd be out at an arena and we wouldn't get home till 8 o'clock and bedtime wasn't done till 9 PM. And it was me, myself and I was done, like done. And I wasn't ready for it. And therefore I didn't have supports in place. And I was like, I am not repeating that year again. That was just last year. And so this year, I was like, okay, I made a list of all the things that cost me energy that I could give to someone else that don't really matter. And I did that. And like, I just slowly worked down the list to get rid of all of the mental chatter and energy and decisions that I actually don't care about and that don't hold any sort of self-worth to me at all. And I know for some people it's different. This is me. I don't care if I bake the cookies as long as the cookies are baked. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not getting any extra mummy brownie points for baking cookies. They don't care who baked them. They just want cookies, as the example, or food or anything like that. So I really, really had like a hard conversation with myself. And I was like, okay, if you want to be physically in tip-top shape, and you want to show up as the mom that you are proud of, and if you want to grow this big, big business and hold space for thousands of people, like, you got to let a lot go. And that's to avoid burnout at this stage. For me, that was the only way to do it, because there was just, there's not enough units of energy in my day to give to all the things that are required to have an awesome life.
Well, and I really believe strongly, I talk to my patients about this, that I believe that burnout is the product of our limiting beliefs. And those limiting beliefs mean things like, well, I'm not enough if I'm not there every night for pickup, or I'm not being a good mom if I'm not at every single activity alongside my husband, or vice versa. Or this notion that we as women have to do it all, I think is a massive source of burnout for so many. And every family is set up differently, as you have alluded to. You're doing a lot of these different things on your own. And I know we probably both have women in our communities where they feel like they have to bear the brunt of work at home. And I also suspect in a lot of those situations that's self-imposed.
Right.
But if you are going to bear the brunt of it, like you've talked about some really key strategies to be able to start to offload things. And that doesn't always mean outsource things. It often is just the time of day in which you make those key decisions. But you kind of have to be willing to rip it all apart and start from scratch.
For sure. And that's basically what I did. Like I was attached to picking my kids up, and you know, listen, I'm a nutritionist. Like one of the biggest things for me was like, you should be able to cook and feed your family healthily. Sure. In a perfect world. Yeah. I should be able to do that. But for 2 years, that wasn't happening because I didn't have units of energy at 4 o'clock to do that, because my day was already 11 hours long. Right. And so, sure, should I be able to? Of course. Can I? No, actually, I can't. And so I had to really let go of a lot of those like shoulds in favor of my sanity, quite honestly, like my actual well-being, not even just from a business perspective, because that's easy for me. Like the business stuff is easy. Like I can power through. But even with that, like I stopped powering through, you know, I gave myself permission to be like, you're tired, stop. And that didn't make me a bad person or a bad like business owner. If I didn't, you know, if I took 2 hours to watch some TV when I was like exhausted. But yeah, I had to release a lot of the shoulds. And I think that comes from cultural norms too. And I don't talk about it openly, like, because it felt, I felt like kind of embarrassed that I wasn't able to do all of the things. But I'm not, I'm just not, I actually want to do very little. I want to do now that I've like, ooh, this is good. This is having me feeling good. Like I said, this is the first time in a decade where my body hasn't tanked after really, you know, trying to do the workouts and do the work and be everywhere with the kids. Like this is the first time. And I think it's because I let go of a lot of the shoulds and acquired help to do all the rest of it that doesn't need me personally.
And I know a lot of women in my practice where when I ask them, I ask people to categorize. I did this with our mastermind group as well. And we did something similar. We both done strategic coach. And we looked at that as well, where we look at tasks and things during the day. And there's a lot of things that we're completely capable of doing at a high level of execution. We're actually quite good at it. But it just, you don't love it. It doesn't light you up. And those are things to get rid of. And I talk to women about that in my practice. And my favorite situation is when people have... they've got teenagers and they're still caught in this situation where they're doing everything for their kids because they believe that they should, including the things they don't love to do. And having mature kids is such a fabulous opportunity to start to offload some of these responsibilities that we take on as women. I think we have like multiple genetic generations of duty built into us as women and shoulds built into us as women about what it means to be a good mother and what it means to be a good woman. And I really want to disrupt that way of of thinking, I'm very happy to interrupt that genetic lineage for my girls. I don't want them doing things because they think they should do them. I want them to do things that light their soul, plus clean their room.
And be like a good steward of personal items if they are important to them. But it's the same. It's like, you know, the way that I think about it, and I had to really sit with this, and this was really hard for me, specifically like hiring a housekeeper. I don't know what the block was around that, but like, it was really hard. And now that I have one, and it's made my life, like it's enhanced all of our lives, like my kids' life and like my life. And, you know, I think also too, like, it's this, for me at least, I don't want them growing up not having any responsibility. And it's this fine line, but I want them to have responsibility because they actually feel pride in what they're doing, because they know that that is what being a good adult is, not because they should. You know what I mean? Like, being a good person in the world is, not because they should.
Mm-hmm. And this is, to be clear, not absolving you of adult responsibilities. It's just finding a new way to deal with them and a new package with which you can deal with them.
So what's going on in my brain right now is like, you're listening to this and you're like, okay, but I don't have the financial resources, or how do I actually start to offload this? Like, so I'm trying to think of ways that that could be of service to you. And I think the best way to start is if you have a family of any kind, whether that's like a spouse or kids or even an immediate family, I would sit them down. And I would make a list of all the things that you need help with. And here's the part about taking yourself seriously that we haven't gotten to yet. You need to, like, this has been my experience, and this is the experience of working with people who are growing businesses, like who are there and who are growing businesses online. You have to prioritize the time that you need to do the work. And often it's 10 plus hours a day. Like, let me just say what it is in case anyone's under this illusion that you're going to do it in 2 hours a day. And so in order to do that successfully without burning out, you actually should get rid of all the other things. And the only way to do that is to ask for help. And so if you don't have the financial means to hire people, then you have to go to the next available source, which is friends and family and neighbors. And you put your pride aside and you put your ego aside, because the mission of you building the business should outweigh your pride and your ego. And so writing a list of the things that soak up your time and soak up your energy, and getting them off your plate and asking people to help you. Even if that means that they're doing your laundry once a month, it's still one time you don't have to do it. That's 3 extra hours, right? And that's energy that you don't have to expend. And so that's part of taking yourself seriously, is sitting down with your loved ones and being like, I'm on a mission. My purpose in this world is to do this. And every time I have to do grocery shopping or laundry or this or that, it takes X units of energy. And therefore, I don't have what I need to have to grow this business, to grow this business, to change my life, to change our lives, and to change my clients' lives. And so if you don't have the financial resources, then that's where I would start. And to be told, like, I'm no BS, if you are listening to this and you don't do that, I mean this with all like love, good luck to you in building your business. There comes a point in time where you have to just sort of surrender to what it's going to take and just do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that advice. And the one thing I'll often get people to do is really first and foremost for themselves, identify their high energy times during the day. And you've done that, right? You're like, 5 to 7 is my time. That's when I really need to sit down and focus, and I can write and I can get things out the door. And you need to honor that for whoever you are and whatever it is that you are doing, is identify your high energy time of the day and clear everything out of that period of time. Because often you can get 3 times more done in that high energy time than you can otherwise. So that's not when you're folding laundry. It's not when you're checking email. It's when you're doing your most brain intensive activities. And you do those things first. And you move all of the soul-sucking pieces that you aren't necessarily in a position to outsource yet to your lowest energy times of the day. Do those at night. And I know so many side hustlers and early entrepreneurs where they're serving everyone else all day in their highest brain function time. And then finally, once all the kids are in bed, that's when they sit down and try to work on their business. But your body and your physiology is not on your side at that point during the day.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that was one of the biggest things that I did early on was I realized, okay, when can I do certain tasks? And the writing just comes so much easier to me in the day. And if I had to write at night, I would, but it could only be after the kids go to bed and there's like absolute quiet. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of taking yourself seriously and burning out, I think so many of us, myself and like me included, I was still, I felt at times like I was walking through like a haze and I was just following the structure of what everybody else said to do. And I didn't really stop and think for myself, you know, this catchphrase, like, how do you want to feel? Like I knew it, but at a very surface level, like I didn't really spend time thinking about what would get me there. Like I knew how I wanted to feel, but what would actually get me there? Because that's scary, because that might mean not hanging out with certain people. That might mean, you know, having to have hard conversations with other people. That might mean having to ask for help, like all of these things. But at the end of the day, the people that take on that, whatever that is, the hard, the risk, those are the people that grow really big businesses and are really successful personally and professionally. Right? You don't get to a high level by taking the easy road. It doesn't work that way.
No, it definitely doesn't. And I had a great conversation with Andrea Nakayama earlier today, and we were talking about the difference between ease and easy.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome. And we both acknowledge that like this is not an easy path. And so if you're one of those people where you're like, oh, I just make decisions because I follow what's easy, and that's how I know I'm on the right path, I'm like, oh, sister, you are in the wrong neck of the woods now. Because easy is not what this is about. But promoting ease, absolutely, they're two different concepts.
Yes, totally. And one of the things that my mentor said so long ago, which has totally stuck with me, is it's simple. It's just not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same vein, right? Like I always say, take the path of least resistance. Because if you're constantly resisting, you know, and then you go and you're like, oh, I'll just take the easy way, you're still resisting. So it should feel like the path of least resistance or with ease, but it's not easy.
It's not easy. It's not easy physically. It's not easy mentally. And it's not easy emotionally. And I heard you say this a few times about the things that you feel like you should do or the shame or the guilt that you felt. And I've often heard you talk about the fact that you don't live in a space of guilt. But you did mention shame. How did those two emotions, how have they served you on this journey to where you have become as an entrepreneur, but also as someone taking responsibility for your life?
I don't live in that space for long. I definitely feel it. And it motivates me to change. And I think that is what separates people like me and you and people who are successful personally and professionally, because we don't sit in the yuck feelings. We feel them. And then it's in our nature to be like, okay, I felt this one too many times. So now I'm actually going to do something about it. And depending on what it is, I either do something about it faster, or if it's a bigger thing that I need to get over, then it takes me a little longer. But for me, shame has fueled me to become a better person. You know, where I'm acutely aware of, And I learned this from Brené Brown, and I forget what book it was, but she had a book about like shame for like in terms of parenting, like, do you make your kids feel guilty or do you shame them? And there were so many examples in the book. Maybe it was like Daring to Lead for Parents or something. I don't know. There were so many examples in the book where it really identified the difference between guilt and shame. And if I feel guilty about something, then I will own it. And if a conversation needs to be had, then I will have it. Shame is the, for me, it's the inner work. Like if I feel guilty about something, then I probably wasn't just in my right mind. You know, like I said a dumb thing or I just wasn't in my right mind. And so I'll own that and move on, like move on. But shame, like for me, shame is a serious trigger that I need to dive in and do the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like shame and guilt both for me create, they create friction. And if we're moving to a place where ease is what you are chasing, then you have to confront that friction. And I love that you said that. As soon as you feel it, you confront it. And if you listen to people who talk about high performers, someone like Brendan Burchard, he's like, what high performers do is when they encounter a challenge, or in this case, we'll say friction, they confront it right away. It doesn't get swept under the rug. They don't modify their behavior around it. They lean into it. And so, you know, for people listening, I would say take the shame or take the guilt and really stop and pause and understand what's behind it. And I'm pretty sure 90% of the time it's the limiting belief related to whatever that activity is.
And it's so interesting to me. And I mean, I don't know, I'm not sure where this came from for me, but I don't understand why people are so afraid of it. Like, and maybe because I've done it so many times
afraid
now.
Of what?
Like just facing their stuff, you know, like asking for help, facing their stuff, like not, you're not going to die, like nothing, you know, like it's not that bad. And on the other side of it is growth. And if, and it's almost like you say you want this life, you say you want this thing, but you're not willing to like go through the mud to get there. Right. And so it's so interesting to me when people are, you know, saying one thing and I'm like, but you're not willing to like face your own demons. Like, that's what has to happen. and face up to the weak spot and just even acknowledge them or whatever it is, like change your morning or ask for help or stop doing something that doesn't feel good just because you think you should. Things like that.
In your mind, is dealing with all this shit a prerequisite to being a successful entrepreneur?
In my world, yes. But I'm pretty sure, you know, you go and you look and like the real world, no. I'm pretty sure that there's lots of high level people who have loads of crap who are so unhappy. I think it depends on who you ask. In my world, yes, 100%. And I think that has more to do with me being like a highly sensitive person than anything else. Because I don't think that I could operate at this high of a level if I didn't deal with my own stuff.
Right. Well, and I would argue as someone external to that, that it also speaks to the fact that you are an authentic person. And so what you say and what you share at any given moment is a reflection of where you are at authentically and truly, which is why I think you are such a powerful mentor and coach for so many people.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, fellow go-getters. So we've got a lot going on right now over at Anthropology Performance Labs, and I want to make sure that you guys are in the loop. We have groups and contests and quizzes and meal plans and all sorts of things that you can get your hands on. And the best place for you to be in the know is actually to ensure that you are following and hanging out and engaging over on the gram. My personal handle, which is @Dr. Megan Walker, is where most of this activity is currently taking place. And so I'm going to invite all of you to come on over and to follow and to play along. This way you can engage with our weekly guests, get direct links to some of the things that they're talking about in our show notes, and have access to some of the coolest new quizzes, ideas, and games and links that we have in the pipeline over at Anthropology. Head on over to Instagram, hit follow, and let's keep in touch. My handle over there is @Dr. Megan Walker, and let's keep the conversation happening. And I think this is actually a really perfect place to transition to the second part of the conversation. And I call this second part our KPIs or key performance indicators. So we just talked about all the stuff you need to be doing to be able to achieve some balance and move out of the zone of burnout. And really, to sum it all up, you gotta deal with your shit. But I want to look at your KPIs, your key performance indicators with respect to how you live your life that help you to exist in this authentic and evolved and an ever-growing state. So if you'll indulge me, I've got some rapid fire coming your way.
Let's do it.
All right. Who is inspiring you right now?
My daughter, actually. She's going through some stuff at school. She's 10. She's a girl. She's going through stuff at school. And she is so freaking inspiring to me right now.
What is your audacious goal for this year?
To be in a relationship with a man.
Oh, girlfriend, I like that.
Holy as that sounds, that is an audacious goal of mine.
You also have to do the work to make that work.
I know, that's why it's pretty audacious.
I love it.
Slowly but surely doing the work, yeah.
What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
So I would say within the last 6 months is the workouts. It's moving my body first. But in general, I would say getting up in the morning like that, that 90 minutes, as a single mom, honestly, I think it's like my biggest sanity saver.
I know. I need my kids to sleep through the night and then I'm going to join your club.
Well, that's different. But you know what? I have to say, even when my son didn't, I still did. I needed time in the morning to myself.
Yeah. No, it's a really good point. I'm also going to own that we just talked about doing what works right for you. So I will play with it and then decide whether it works.
Yeah.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I don't know. It's funny because like, I don't think of myself as being a badass person. Honestly, I'm badass. I'm really good at marketing. Like, I know you guys probably knew that, but like, sometimes I even surprise myself.
That is a totally amazing skill to have in this industry.
Yeah.
What do you do for fun or play?
For fun, I play cards with my kids. We are avid like game players in this family. I'm a huge fan of changing your state. So often there'll just be like a random song and you just silly dance it out. In the car, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll be anywhere. My kids are so embarrassed of me. I'll just like dance. I don't care. And so that's something fun or silly.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think that you're born with a certain ability to have resilience. And a risk tolerance. I think some of the skills can be learned, but I think innately, I think it's just who you are.
Lori Kennedy, always so much fun. When people are asking us where they can find out more about you, where should we send them?
You can come to Instagram. It's at Lori Kennedy Inc. So Lori spelled L-O-R-I. And feel free to DM me. Like, I love talking to you all. It's actually me who answers that on that platform. And I just really like having these types of conversations. I think at the end of the day, like, we're all real people. And, you know, the more connected that we are, the better.
Amazing. That's why you are a marketing genius. Imagine that, connecting to real people in an authentic way. Lori, thanks so much for being here. Like always, it was a total pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.